Today, we are going to hear from two literary icons. Isabel Allende and Sandra Cisneros loom large over the literary landscape. In fact, their respective careers have a lot of parallels. They both published their first novels around the same time. Isabel Allende's House of the Spirits was published in 1982, and Sandra Cisneros published House on Mango Street in 1983. Both writers are adamant about writing what they know. In Isabel Allende's case, it's about life and love and death and being an immigrant here in the U.S. from her native Chile, while Sandra Cisneros' books touch on many of the same themes but are written from the perspective of a Chicago native and capture the trappings of a bicultural life. But while their writing styles are different, their subject matter doesn't have much in common. What they do have in common is a vast fan base, and most likely, there are a lot of folks who claim both as their favorites. Today, we are teaming up with our pals at the fantastic Alt Latino podcast to bring you interviews with both writers. I'm Stephen Thompson. On this episode of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, our dear friend Felix Contreras interviews literary legends Isabel Allende and Sandra Cisneros.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision, kind of like choosing to listen to your favorite song on repeat. And with their top-rated app, you can deposit checks and transfer money anytime, anywhere, making Capital One an even easier decision. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Isabel Allende, it's an extreme honor and a pleasure to have you on Alt Latino. Welcome to Alt Latino.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure and my honor.
Okay. The first question I have is, like, how do you tell your own story after writing so many others?
Well, it's very different to write fiction than to write a memoir. And there's some connection, though, in my case, because I lie all the time. So fiction is a bunch of lies. And when I tell my own life, I don't even know what's true and what I've made up. But it doesn't matter. I have the right to create my own legend, don't I? So, So for me, it's easy to tell my life because it also has been a life of ups and downs, of great sorrow and also success, of displacement. So I have been always a foreigner, a political refugee, an immigrant. And that gives me, that gives me the ability to look at myself and my life as if I was a spectator. I can look at it from a certain distance. And that helps.
I want to talk a little bit about the muse or inspiration and where you get inspiration for the stories that you tell in your book.
I think that I keep repeating certain themes that are like obsessions. I talk about love and death, restorative justice, loyalty, courage, strong women, absent fathers. And those themes come in different forms. It could be a historical novel. Why do I choose that period or that character? Because somehow it taps into what I'm trying to sort in myself, these themes that I mentioned, or it could be a memoir, or it could be a literary fiction, a young adult novel. In every case, I go back to those themes. Now, where does the inspiration come? I think that often it's something that is in the air. Let me give you an example. Long Petal of the Sea is a story of refugees. It's based on the life of a man I knew when I was living in exile in Venezuela. And his name was Victor Pei. And Victor told me his story 40 years ago. But I never thought that I would write it until the theme of refugees and migrants was in the air. And everybody's talking about it. And there's all this anti-immigrant sentiment and all this rhetoric that impacts me enormously. And then I remember the story of Victor Pei and I could write it. So it's timing. Why something needs to be written now and not before or after? Because it's in the air.
Do you ever fear that you will run out of stories to tell?
No. How could I run out of stories? Every human being has a story. My emails every day, I mean, they add up to the hundreds sometimes. And often, I would say several times a week, someone is offering me her or his story because they feel that their life are special and that someone needs to tell it, and they're not writers. And I cannot do that. I have to write about the story that is inside me, that is connected to me. I don't take other people's full stories, but I'm often inspired by the lives of other people. For example, I have a foundation, and through my foundation, I get to meet the most traumatized and vulnerable and strong and resilient women. So I don't need to invent those characters. They are there. I just need to bring them into the writing. But I will never run out of stories. I will run out of life. That's for sure.
Well, hopefully that won't be for a long time.
Well, you know what, Felix? I'll be 80 next year. And I was telling my husband today that I feel stronger and more creative than at 50.
I have a personal theory that, women are made, obviously, women are made differently than men. You guys get stronger and more powerful and more intense with the universe as you get older. It just happens. That's been my...
You know why? Because when we get older, we push men out of the way. We don't need them anymore.
Okay. I will add that to my theory, okay? Well, I do remember reading a quote from you that you like, when you try to write about a romantic theme in your book, you like to kill, Liz, I kill him somewhere around page 112. Because I see what I can't stand the guy.
Yeah, I always have that when I start the book. I have that's such an attractive hero, male hero, you know. He's dark, he's intense, he's idealistic, he has long black hair. And then by very soon, you can't stand the guy. He's a jerk. And if I can't stand it, why would my female protagonist be in love with him? She has to kill him. Well, she doesn't. I do.
I want to go back to your foundation, because you mentioned your foundation, the Isabel Allende Foundation, and it's something that I read that really touched me. And I want to see if this is accurate, what I read, that it was inspired by a trip to India. That's something that happened during a trip to India. Can you explain that, please?
Yes. I after my daughter died, I wrote a book called Paula. And it became very successful. And of course, I couldn't touch any of the income of that book because it didn't belong to me. It was my daughter's. So I thought, how can I honor my daughter? But I didn't know. I was thinking of a park. I was thinking of different things. And then I did a trip to India. And in a rural trip in Rajasthan, far away from everything, very hot, we had hired a driver. And the car got very hot, so he stopped to cool the engine. And my friend Tabra and I saw a small group of women near a tree. We walked to the women, and you know, women connect. We didn't have a language in common, but we started touching each other. And we had bought a lot of silver bracelets in a market, and we gave them the bracelets. They were very, very poor. And they had some children around. And then when we were leaving, one of the women gave me this little parcel of rags. And I thought she was trying to give me something for the bracelets. And I said, no, it's not necessary. And I tried to give it back, but she wouldn't take it back. So I opened these rags, and inside was a newborn baby. I don't think the baby was more than a day old. It still had the umbilical cord. It smelled of ashes and feces and, I mean... so little, so dark, so vulnerable. It was just a little creature. So I kissed the baby, blessed the baby, and tried to give it back, and she wouldn't take it. And in that moment, the driver came running and took the baby from my arms and pushed it in the arms of another woman. and dragged me to the car. And we had already started the car and we were driving away. When I reacted, I was so shocked. And I said, why would that woman want to give me the baby? And the driver said, it was a girl. Who wants a girl? And that was what triggered the idea of the foundation. I couldn't help that baby. And to this day, I regret it. And I couldn't help that mother that was so desperate and so poor that she was willing to give away the baby, knowing that the baby would be better with somebody else. But I said, well, maybe through a foundation, I can help other babies like that little girl and other mothers like that one. And that was the beginning of the foundation. So the mission of the foundation is to invest in the power of women and girls.
I want to go back to your memoirs for a second. Were there any parts that were difficult to write?
My latest little memoir is The Soul of a Woman. And nothing was difficult to write. It was all inside me and it was fun to write it. And I hope that it's fun for the people who read it as well, because it's much of it is tongue in cheek. There's a lot of serious material there because I talk about what ails women and the war against women in the world. Unfortunately, I published it before the events of the Taliban today. But this is the Taliban is a perfect example of how there is a war against women and how women are the first victims in any conflict. Have you seen the pictures of multitudes of people trying to get to the planes? Yeah. Have you seen any women there? They are all men. The women are left behind with the kids, and they will fend for themselves. They are the first victims, and they will be the first victims of Taliban, not the men. So there's, as I said, a lot of very harsh material in the book, but it's a conversation with the reader, and like in any conversation around the kitchen when we have having a cup of tea, it's fun also.
What is your writing process?
I start all my books on January 8th. Can you imagine January 7th, what it looks like? Oh my God, I'm a wreck. But by January 8th, I have freed my calendar and I can really focus on the writing. And everybody around me knows, because I've been doing this for 40 years, that I'm not available starting January 8th. And then I can lock myself away and begin a book. Then, of course, I'm pulled to book tours. A lot of stuff happens, but I have the project. And it's always in my heart and in my mind. And I try to work every single day for as many hours as possible. When I was younger, that would be 10, 12, sometimes 14 hours a day. Now I can't. Now 6 hours and... It's not that my brain is tired. My butt is tired. I don't want to be sitting down for so long. Mm-hmm.
And before we end this conversation, I have to ask you about two of your books, Eva Luna and then The Stories of Eva Luna. Mm-hmm. Those two books in particular, but The Stories of Eva Luna are still, I carried that around with me for many, many years, even when, as I was traveling, just reading these stories in both English and in Spanish. Because they were so inspirational. How did that second book come about? Is this something that you just set aside? Like, okay, I wrote this wonderful story about this great storyteller and then left us all wondering, well, what kind of stories was she telling?
Exactly. I got a lot of letters and messages and people asking, well, where are the stories? I mean, this is a book about a storyteller and there are no stories. It's only her story. I was living in Venezuela when I wrote Eva Luna. And many of the adventures of Eva Luna, I got them from the newspapers because such a crazy, crazy place. I mean, Latin America is crazy. But all the yellow press, you know, the equivalent of the National Enquirer and so forth, they published stories that were, of course, made up, but wonderful. And so when I decided, well, I finished Eva Luna and I came to the United States on a book tour and I fell in lust with a guy that eventually I married, but I moved in with him without an invitation and I didn't have a room of my own. His life was a mess. So I could only, I would spend the day sitting in a bench in a, you know, somewhere, or in a coffee shop, or in the car sometimes. And the only advantage of a short story over a novel is that you can do it in a short period of time. But it's a very difficult genre. If you are an aspiring writer and you think that writing short stories will get you into it, it's much harder. Just tackle the novel from the beginning. And so those stories are also based, many of them, on newspapers. For example, there is a story of a little boy that is sold for his organs. And that was published. And that was published in many newspapers. And that was something that the Catholic Church researched. I didn't have to make it up. I read it in the newspapers. I just had to imagine the family of the little boy. I don't remember all the stories, but there is another one of the little girl that was buried in the mud on a landslide in after an earthquake in Colombia. That was the Nevado Ruiz, the hill that sort of the landslide came from that hill, and it buried a town. And the image, the icon of this tragedy was a little girl trapped to her chest in the mud, and they could bring cameras to film her from all over the world, and they couldn't bring a pump to suck the water and get her out, and she died there. So you see, the world is full of stories, and you just have to pay attention.
My thanks again to Isabel Allende for sharing her time and her words with us, both on this podcast and in her books. Next up, Sandra Cisneros, a writer who has been a guest on Alt Latino before, so this conversation is more like catching up.
Sandra Cisneros, welcome back to Alt Latino. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's fun. The last time we had a blast, you remember?
Yes, we had a bunch of stuff to talk about, and you talked about serving tamales to the Beatles.
Yes, that was my childhood fantasy, is that I would marry Paul McCartney and I would serve tamales to the Beatles. I think that was many a young Mexicana's dream.
I think that sounds about right. I love that idea. It was one of my favorite episodes, too.
And I got to pick the songs, remember? Like you played like the songs from my life. Okay, remember when I die to play that playlist? I want to hear that. My spirit's going to come around and yank your feet if you don't play it.
Okay, if I'm here, then that will definitely happen.
Andale, you heard it here.
So Sandra, you have a new book out. So tell us about the essence of the story.
The story is about three women with no money in Paris. And it's about the protagonist, Corina, who they nicknamed Pufina, and Marta from Buenos Aires, and Paula from little crummy town outside of Milano. And they all are in Paris and have no money and meet each other and help each other and sustain each other through all kinds of traumas and wonderful and horrible things. And the protagonist is actually, the story is kind of like if the protagonist was, we were in her brain listening to her interior monologue. And it begins when she is scraping varnish off a hutch in a Chicago apartment where she and her husband and kids live. And she remembers her friend, and she goes in the closet and digs out the old letters from the time when she was young in Paris. And we travel back in time to her friendships, and she examines her life and the choices that she made. So that's all I'm going to say without, like, you know, giving away the ending. But it's a very beautiful story about people that come into our lives very briefly, and they stay for an eternity, and we don't know why, and the mistakes that we made, and the misadventures and adventures we had when we were young.
Is it reflective of some introspection that you're doing at this point in your life?
Well, it's a story I began 30 years ago and put away. And I don't think I could have finished it if you held a gun to my head. I didn't have that perspective of having lived a life. So even though it's about a 20-year-old girl, it really is about looking back on your life a decade and a half to two decades later. And, you know, I always tell young writers that, you know, to write about things that happened to you 10 years or more, because the farther away your story is, the clearer you can see it. And that's because if you were a participant or the protagonist of the story, you can't see yourself. You need at least 10 years. And I think that's why I couldn't finish this story before. I didn't need 30 years, but I was busy, you know, writing novels and writing other books and essays and organizing foundations. And finally, I could finish this story with the perspective that was necessary of having lived a life.
Two things struck me. The first is that the letters, like, it speaks to the idea that we don't write letters anymore. We're always writing emails and texts and all these things that have abbreviated punctuation and thought process. And this is, it, to me, it felt like a celebration of writing letters.
You know, I still write letters. I don't write them as often as I should, but I write them especially when I want to thank someone. And it requires energy, thought, time. You don't rush off a letter. You create a beautiful letter as a gift to the receiver. And you know, maybe people don't write letters anymore, but they should, because you don't you aren't hasty about the language that you use. You don't send off dangerous plant seeds that might make you misunderstood, as we often are misunderstood in text and in other kinds of short letters. Sometimes the tone is lost when I send things in text and people get angry and I have to apologize. It just makes a mess. Whereas when you write a letter, you're forced to sit with your heart. And if you say something incorrectly, you can scratch it out. You can start again. You really are transforming your emotions and distilling them to your highest self. And, you know, we don't have that habit with text. You know, I don't know about you. I have spell check that sometimes says atrocious things that I can't retrieve. You know, so I love the idea of writing letters, and especially for a writer, it's the most natural way that I can express myself, and it's my highest self. You know, I can say things and blunder and then backtrack and circle to try to say. But when we're forced to sit on paper and write, it really does transform us and take us to deep subterranean pools that we didn't know exist. You know, that's why we write. That's why I'm a writer, because I want to go to those deep, profound places, and I want to share them with people I love.
Do you write by hand?
I still do. Yeah, I do. I work on the computer, but I also work by hand. I like having little composition books. I usually have them all around, and especially when I'm traveling. And, you know, then I transfer it from the page onto my laptop. But I work both ways.
The other thing that struck me, and that's something we talked a little bit about, is the idea of looking back on life. And I'm just running into a lot of people, maybe it's just because of my age or our age, you know, that people are looking back. We're in our 60s. We're looking back on things, like you said, mistakes, high points, all of that stuff. It seems to be a common theme these days. And I don't know if the pandemic brought that on or not.
I think Felix, you're right. The pandemic was, to me, a spiritual retreat for all of us. It forced us to cancel a lot of the noise in our life and to become a little more reflective. It was almost like going into a monastery or a convent of sorts and really sorting things out in your heart. But I think also our age is one where we're seeing younger people and older people dying and death being so close by with the pandemic that it makes you evaluate what's important. You know, it makes you evaluate and make priorities in your life. So I have found, as much as this time has been so painful, that it's also been very sacred. And mm-hmm. I think that the painful times in my life have been sacred moments when a part of you dies and hopefully another part of you gets reborn. And I think we're in that as a collective community, you know, a death of maybe some careless practices and a transformation for us to, one, realize that we're responsible for others and they're responsible for us. We're responsible for animals and we're responsible for the planet. And if we don't take care of them, they can't take care of us. Guess what? And so, you know, that kind of interconnectedness, which religions teach us, is absolute. We're seeing that happen now with the planet. So I feel for those of us who are in our 60s, we're especially taking a look at our life and making sense of our mistakes. We learn so much from our mistakes. I think I learn more from my mistakes than I do from my successes.
This is just meant to be a very short catch up to you, you know, to talk about your book, but also to catch up and because you have so many fans here and so many people who follow you and all the work that you do, like you said, all the nonprofit and the work that you do on the side, said a lot of people are interested in just catching up to you and hearing you see what's up with your life and the idea. And the fact that, you know, you moved to Mexico, but you're still putting out, you know, great literature. You're still putting out books. It's always a pleasure to just catch up to you and find out what's going on. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Felix, for this opportunity. And I just want to say how much I appreciate your talking to you, being on your show. Siempre me siento a gusto. You know, that's rare that you could feel so at home. So thank you and your team for having me.
Thank you very much, Sandra Cisneros, and look forward to having you back again.
In person, right?
Yeah. Maybe we all go down to San Miguel Allende to do it there.
Nele, come over here. I welcome you. That would be fun.
Thanks again so much to both Sandra Cisneros and Isabel Allende for joining me here on Alt Latino. Martita, I Remember You is the name of Sandra Cisneros' newest novel. 2022 will see Violeta from Isabel Allende, while her latest memoir, called The Soul of a Woman, is out right now. As always, thank you so much for listening to Alt Latino from NPR Music. And let me remind you that we are in the midst of a Hispanic Heritage Month celebration with a takeover of the Tiny Desk Concert Series. We call it El Tiny. 10 performances from 8 different countries and cultures. Check out each performance at npr.org/music and also on the NPR YouTube channel. We also have a ton of stuff on Instagram, live interviews, some shorter reels, stories. Check us out on the NPR Music Instagram. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'm Felix Contreras. Be safe. Vax up. The music this week is supplied by David Schulman and Quiet Life Motel. Let's hear the rest of the track, Tango Ricardo.